take him here. Is there some pointer?
Oh,
there's some over here. Yeah, recently there were some works on trying to address the question, what is the simplest quantum field theory? Here I'm competing in a different nomination. This maybe would be the answer, what is the weirdest quantum field theory? At least I think it's close to that. So the main question I will discuss is whether superluminal signals are possible in consistent Lorentz invariant quantum field theory. And it seems to be known, the answer is no. So let me start just some motivations of asking this question. And there is sort of motivation, or maybe an excuse, will be that I will try to convince you that the answer is yes, at least in 1+1 dimensions, and if the spatial parity is broken. Now, of course, spatial parity in 1+1 dimension is the whole of the rotation group, so it sounds a bit of a cheating, but at the end of the day, I care about Lorentz invariance in this talk because I want to couple, eventually I'm interested in coupling the theory to gravity, and spatial parity is a discrete symmetry, so you know how to break it and still to couple the theory to gravity. It's broken in our world, so from that point of view, it's not a big deal and not a big problem. But there are more motivations to, more concrete motivations to ask this kind of question, so let me list some of them. First, many people feel that locality is, to some extent, an approximate notion in gravitational theories, and this is mainly based on reasons related to black hole physics, for instance, because we kind of know now that information is supposed to be recovered from the black hole, and that seems to be at odds with locality, and also just theories with dynamical gravity, they don't have any local observables, so again, it seems it's hard to even to define physical quantities, measurable quantities, which would be local in theory with dynamical gravity. And in this talk, actually, I will talk not only about superluminal propagation, which will be possible in this theories I will be talking about, but actually instantaneous signal propagation. And I think that instantaneous signal propagation does qualify as a non-local effect. So, to some extent, I think these theories I will describe here, they provide an example of non-local Lorentz invariant quantum field theories, and that's again interesting just to understand how non-locality is supposed to work in the Lorentz invariant context.
So you'll be telling us what you mean by instantaneous?
Yeah, it will be in a couple of slides, but let me just first finish with my motivations. And probably, again, the main motivation is really just theorist curiosity. Probably that's the main motivation for any theoretical work. But let me be just a bit more concrete. So from early days of GAT and string model builders, somehow the dream was that there is a unique theory of everything with a unique vacuum, and maybe we'll be able to predict all parameters of standard models, say, by just finding this theory. And it turns out that real life is somewhat different, so it seems that now we're dealing with a landscape of 10 to 500 vacua. And what's next? And for instance, the natural question in this context would be now to ask, is there a natural border of this landscape? Maybe one can argue that instead of predicting really parameters of the standard model, the goal of physics at least predict some qualitative features see maybe there are some theories which just one can show they cannot be embedded in a theory with gravity, and that would be not so bad as well. And that goes under the name swampland idea. So there are the idea that maybe there are effective field theories which looks fine when you treat them effective field theory, but due to some deep reasons, they are not embeddable into a consistent theory of quantum gravity. But I think if you are a bit more adventurous, you may ask, maybe actually there is something like landscape plus wonderland. Maybe there are some series which completely different properties that we get used to, and they were just overlooked because they are too unusual. And so definitely superluminal propagation is kind of unusual property for Lorentz invariant series. So that's again more concrete explanation what I mean by theoretical curiosity here. And it's worth pointing out that actually there were recently there was quite amount of work on trying to modify gravity at long distances. And as a result of this work, several effective theories, which look like interesting candidate habitants of this swamp plant, were found. So I think most notably these are DGP model and what might have been called Higgs phases of gravity, which include Gauss condensate and more general models of massive gravity. And these models, they have interesting unexpected phenomenology. For instance, in DGP case, there is a prediction of anomalous precession of the moon perihelion. In these massive gravity models, there are possibility for massive gravitational waves with a mass, basically Compton wavelengths of the order of the solar system size, and black hole hair, which may be potentially absorbed by gravitational wave laboratories. So there are a lot of fun phenomenology here. There are new theoretical opportunities, like even finding alternative for inflation by due to the possibility to have bouncing cosmologies without obvious pathological properties of effective field theory. But at the moment, it's not clear at all whether any of these theories can be embedded into consistent microscopic theory. And typically, there are some tensions with, again, with causality and physics of black holes. So at least these are the reasons why some people think that maybe it's hard or even impossible to embed these models into microscopic consistent microscopic theory. So that was just for me the most concrete motivation to rethink about how causality works in quantum field theory. And also, it will turn out that the models which I will end up discussing, they are 2D models, but they have very similar properties to these 4D Higgs phases of gravity models. So basically, the main property, I think, at least for me, the main defining property of this series is that the series which spontaneously break Lorentz invariants, meaning that there are states which have zero T mu, but not zero vacuum expectation of some other vectors. So that's to some extent definition of series. And so here in the two-dimensional context, I will discuss series which as close come to realizing that as possible in the two-dimensional world. So let me finish with motivations at this point and just really to come to the main point of my argument of this talk, which is rather simple. So let me first remind you the high school argument why superluminal signals are impossible in Lorentz invariant quantum field theory. And that's because if you have two points which are space-like separated, then there is always a Lorentz transformation, which in this case is combination of Lorentz boost and spatial rotation, which can exchange these two points. And that means that there doesn't exist any causal ordering such that one of these points in the past, another in the future, then they're causally connected with each other, which is compatible with Lorentz symmetry, because you can always exchange these two points, and if there is Lorentz invariant, it's not supposed to change the causal ordering. That means that these two points should be causally disconnected. Now, the main observation exploited in this work is that actually this argument doesn't work in 1 plus 1 dimensions if discrete parity is broken, x to minus x, and that's because, of course, there is no rotations in the 1 plus 1 dimensional world. So instead of this rotation, you would like to make a discrete transformation, which is x to minus x reflection, but if spatial parity is not a symmetry, then you are not able to do that. So equivalent way of saying the same thing is that in two dimensions there are two causal structures which are compatible, two causal orderings which are compatible with the Poincaré group without discrete reflection. Namely, the first one is just the standard one, so there is a future light cone, past light cone, and two causally disconnected region. But another causal structure would be to say basically that let's call x plus one of the light cone coordinates, let's call it our absolute time, like in the Galilean theory, and let's just say that it defines causal ordering in this world, and so all points with larger point of larger values of x plus, they have in my causal future, all points with smaller value of x plus there in my causal past, and that's what I mean by instantaneous. So in such a world, there is no causal disconnected region, like here. So it's really qualitatively different causal structure from this one, it's more or less like in Galilean or Newtonian mechanics, and I think instantaneous is a proper world here. Just on purely mathematical grounds, I think it's natural at this point to ask the question, are there quantum field theories in two dimensions that live with this causal structure? We know and love, for different reasons, two-dimensional theories with that causal structure, and they're useful for all kinds of things. So, at least purely mathematically, it's natural to ask other quantum field theories with this second choice of causal ordering. And so, let me say, there is a rather straightforward way of is to start constructing this series. So let me just, this would be a trivial example of such a theory. So it has a vector field, but the plus component of the vector field, I'm not insisting, so parity is broken here, so it's fine to have just plus component. And then one can write Lagrangian of this kind. So really, the way to think about this instantaneous series that x plus is your time. So this Lagrangian is really analog of the Lagrangian for Newtonian potential in just Newtonian theory of gravity. So this is really a trivial theory. There is no propagating degrees of freedom in this theory. This a plus is a kind of instantaneous, the potential mediating instantaneous long-range force along the constant x plus slices.
Is there any meaning to the fact that that's a vector a plus rather than just some scalar?
Well, it's because of that property, the theory is actually Lorentz invariant. So it's invariant under Lorentz transformations to D, where a plus transforms there.
Okay, and what happened to A minus then? So then you need a plus minus for Lorentz invariance.
Well, not quite, because parity is broken, so that's a peculiar property of life in two dimensions, that you can have A plus without A minus as soon as you allow yourself to break parity.
It's a chiral vector field.
Yeah, it's a chiral vector field, yeah.
Yeah.
So this theory is really trivial. There is no propagating degrees of freedom here. So one can make it somewhat less trivial. So for instance, let's introduce now both A plus and A minus. This is that term. So this is something which is pure gradient. This term is pure kinetic term. If you think about plus coordinate as your time, then this is pure kinetic term. So in some sense, A plus is a kind of Lagrange multiplier in this theory because it doesn't have time derivative. You can, in principle, integrate A plus out and get some non-local looking action involving just A minus. But A minus gives you propagating degree of freedom, and you can write some interaction like here. So the reason I put square here, if I just introduce mass term, A plus A minus, then it would be instability in this theory. But you can forbid such mass term, say by discrete symmetry, A minus goes to minus A minus. So you can just have this kind of terms. And that would be a candidate for a theory with this causal structure. You can see already, so from this So from this structure that you have d plus here and minus d minus here, it suggests you that it's really correctly to think about x plus as time and x minus as space coordinate. And also, for instance, if you try to do in this theory the conventional weak rotation, t goes to it, then you don't get Euclidean action with a sine definite real part. But on the other hand, if you do weak rotation where x plus is rotated to minus ix plus, then you get positive Euclidean action. So it suggests that actually this theory by itself can be a good quantum field theory with that instantaneous structure.
Is there any meaning to gauge invariance?
No, this is not a gauge invariance theory. So it's just a theory of 2D vector, but yeah, so it explicitly breaks gauge invariance here. We ended up studying a bit different class of models, and okay, the real reason for that was that we started by looking at this class of models due to independent reasons, because that 2D version of these Higgs phases of gravity, and then realize the key to understand their properties that they live in this instantaneous causal structure. But another reason is that, so if you think about this this study as an attempt to mimic non-local physics, then somehow you want situations of when you have somehow sector which approximately non-instantaneous, approximately normal, and you want to couple it to instantaneous sector. And you want to have a limit when this coupling becomes small, so that the observer who made of normal stuff may be tricked into thinking that he lives in the normal world. But then there is some small corrections which give rise to, from his point of view, they're really not local, but from his point of view, naively can think this is a causal effect. But it seems too hard. It seems hard to achieve that because, if you look at the conventional massive scalar field and look at this its equation in the light cone coordinates, then it doesn't have second derivative in x plus. So it suggests that actually constant x plus surfaces are not good Cauchy slices for this problem. It's first order differential equation rather than second order differential equation. So it seems that in instantaneous world, constant x plus surfaces are the only possible Cauchy slices. So it seems hard to achieve this picture in a consistent way. But somehow the hope was that if you can get a theory where there is some vector, for instance, which has a non-zero expectation values, or more correctly, for all backgrounds, V plus is non-zero, then you may introduce this kind of coupling. And then this gives rise to the second time derivative, second x plus derivative for the field phi. On the other hand, if this coupling goes to zero, you may hope to restore normal physics in the phi sector. So that was independent motivation to consider theories of this kind where you have some vector condensates. But as I said, the original motivation was also that this really mimics the physics, interesting physics in four dimensions in this Higgs phases of gravity. So to summarize, we ended up studying the following theory, which you may call SO11 nonlinear sigma model, where SO11 is the Lorentz group in two dimensions, and this theory is also known as Einstein ether theory. And in condensed matter literature, the Euclidean version of this theory would be called liquid crystal, but it turns out that actually, so the Lorentzian version of this theory is rather different from, so you can, it seems you cannot gain much from the knowledge of condensed matter physicists about this. But anyway, so this is a theory of non-gauge invariant vector in two dimensions, and you just write down all possible second derivative terms compatible with Lorentz invariants, and you introduce a constraint which fixes the length of this vector to be equal to 1. So lambda here is a Lagrange multiplier, and so there are these three coefficients, and so there are two terms which preserve parity, and there is one term in the action which breaks parity. Now, to analyze this series, actually it's convenient to solve this constraint by directly introducing the field, so by writing v plus v minus as exponent that explicitly solves this constraint, and you get this action for a single, it's not quite a scalar field because it transforms nonlinearly under Lorentz transformations, but so I will call it scalar for shortness. So you get a series of this single boost field, in a sense, psi, and there are actually, so these coefficients g, beta plus, beta minus, they are related to the original, the values of original couplings, alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, but actually by the shift of field psi, just by making the field redefinition psi to psi plus psi 0, you can arbitrarily change the ratio of beta plus, beta minus by a constant positive factor. So there are really three different cases to consider. First, when these two coefficients are equal to each other, and so that corresponds to a situation when parity is not broken. Then when they're opposite to each other, and the third case is when one of these coefficients is zero. So let me start with this case, because I think that would be the most clear example of theory which appears to be non-pathological and realizes this instantaneous causal structure. So again, now we have action of this form. So and again, we have this structure. So d plus psi squared minus d minus psi squared. So it strongly suggests that plus and minus actually the right time and x variables to think about. And so the main properties of series are the following. So first, it's invariant under Lorentz transformations in 2D, where psi transforms as a Goldstone boson, transforms non-homogeneously with shifts by constant. Also, just by naive power counting, it's renormalizable theory in 2D. It has derivative interactions, but in 2D there are no more than two derivatives, so it's renormalizable in two dimensions. Also, just as the previous theory, if you do weak rotation x plus goes to my minus I x plus, then you get Euclidean action. There will be some imaginary part coming from here, but importantly, that real part of Euclidean action will be positive. So it suggests that there is a good functional integral description for this theory with positive Euclidean action. Also, there is a positive definite Hamiltonian conjugate to x plus. And finally, this theory is asymptotically free. So let me explain what I mean here by asymptotically free. So if you do one loop RG in this theory, where one loop means that my expansion parameter is G, by I'm doing all orders in beta, then at one loop, G is constant, but beta runs according to this equation. And so this is the solution of this RG. So at short distances, there is a fixed point where beta goes to zero. So at short distances, the theory flows just to a theory of really a massless scalar field in two dimensions, conventional Lorentz invariant massless scalar field. At long distances, beta goes to infinity, but that doesn't really signal any strong coupling in this theory, because as I said, this was all orders in beta. It's G was the expansion parameter. And another way of saying that, so if you look at this action and take the limit beta to infinity, so let's drop this term. It's small in this limit. And then just let's call kappa the ratio of G squared over beta. This is the coefficient which appears here. Now, then in this theory now, kappa plays the role of coupling constant, and because beta goes to infinity, this coupling constant actually goes to zero. So this theory has this RG flow, and it remains perturbative all the way along this RG flow. So it seems that this is a healthy quantum field theory, not only normalizable but also asymptotically free. Now let's come to the superluminal travel here. Let's discuss just dispersion relations for perturbative excitation in this theory around vacuum. So let's show this is for the vacuum psi equal to zero. So if I choose psi equal to zero vacuum, then around this vacuum there are two propagated modes. There is left mover and right mover, and because parity is broken, they have different velocities, and one of them propagates subluminally, another propagates superluminally. So one propagates inside light cone, another propagates outside light cone. So we have superluminal travel here. So where is instantaneous causal structure is coming from? So, okay, this point, small digression, probably is another. So how does this whole story agree with Coleman-Merman-Wagner theorem that in two dimensions it's not possible to break to spontaneously break continuous symmetries due to basically IR divergences, and somehow the physics of and here we're discussing so this at the classical level all this discussion was in terms of Goldstone of Lorentz symmetry. Lorentz symmetry is either continuous symmetry, and this dispersion relation does break. It's not Lorentz invariant. So somehow the physics of this Coleman-Merman-Wagner theory is that if you look, for instance, at some ferromagnetic, so if you look at it at small scales, you will find the spin which looks in one particular direction. But when you start averaging it, go at longer distances, then fluctuations of these spins, they averages out, and the result they give rise to the in this case rotationally invariant correlators. So similarly, in this theory, if you look at the different vacuum, so cycle to any constant is there vacuum solution in this theory, which is correspond just by taking a boost of psi equal to zero vacuum, so because psi was transforming, there was a piece, constant piece in the Lorentz transformation for psi. So if you take a boost of this psi equal to zero vacuum, then by making this boost, you may make this this left mover to propagate anywhere inside light cone, and by similarly this right mover you can propagate it everywhere in this direction. So this all suggests that in the end of the day, when you do this kind of averaging, you will recover the correlators, that the retarded propagator will be non-zero in this whole region, because there is a possibility, so by choosing different vacua, you may propagate anywhere in this direction. In other words, somehow, one of the lessons learned in 70s, for instance, from the study of this series in 2D, that roughly, so for any question which doesn't ask directly whether global symmetry is broken or not, you can use perturbation theory to address this question. But one should be careful about questions dealing with asking really whether the symmetry is broken or not. And like one famous example, there was, I don't remember exactly the name of this theory, I keep forgetting, it's something like Schwinger model. It's a theory of chiral fermion which gets a mass from the web of the scalar field, and what was found by using Lagrangian expansion is that fermion gets a mass, and that seemed to contradict to the statement that chiral symmetry, which prevents it from being massive, shouldn't be unbroken. But what turned out, if you solve this model exactly, is that the fact that fermion is massive is correct, but the real fermion, this massive degree of freedom, is not charged under chiral symmetry. And you don't see that in the perturbation theory. So somehow the answer to the physical, so the pole was perturbation theory gives you the right answer where the pole is, but it deceives you in the question whether symmetry is broken or not. Similar here, I think you can trust perturbation theory in the question what is the causal structure of your theory is, but you should be careful about whether Lorentz symmetry is broken or not, at least at long distances. But so that's probably all what I have to say about this case, beta plus equal beta minus. It definitely seems
that, doesn't that also agree with your RG flow that beta is going to infinity in the infrared? When beta goes to infinity, you have the terms that are left over. Do they not exactly have this causal structure? Or if I just keep the is that? I mean, it seems to hint at the same thing. Your RG.
Well, this theory. No, I don't quite see it because, for instance, if you take. So again, still there is the theory is still theory of Goldstone. So for instance, if you depending on what value of psi you choose here, you get different distortion relations. And this effect of averaging of this Coleman thing is not dynamical effect. It's really kinematical effect. You have it even for free scalar field in two dimensions. This averaging of a different vacua. So yeah, you don't necessarily see it because this is really some dynamics. This RG story, it knows about dynamics of this theory. So it would be definitely nice to find this Lorentz invariant correlators in a more closed form in this theory, or maybe even find some solvable example of this kind of series. And actually, there is a hope to doing that. And to illustrate that point, so let me consider now another case, the case of when one of the betas was equal to zero. So this is the theory now, and actually, so again, there is a piece which looks like just free boson in two dimensions, and there is a term which is somewhat similar to Liouville interaction, but there is extra d plus psi squared here, and I put plus minus here, so at the moment it's not important, but it will be important later. And usually you don't want to have minus here because it would correspond to wrong sign kinetic term for this psi. But here, if you interpret x plus as your time, then it's enough that beta is positive. And then you don't care about this sign. So just have the moment you have this term positive, it means that you have right sign kinetic term with respect to, in other words, you have positive definite Hamiltonian conjugate to x plus. Now, this theory, it looks superficially similar to the Liouville theory, which doesn't have this d plus psi squared term here, but actually there are more similarities. It's not just the way the action looks like. First, the value of beta in this theory actually is also, it's not a physical parameter of the theory because you can change it by making a constant shift on the psi field. Also, so Liouville theory is invariant under full conformal symmetry in 2D, but this theory, the classical level at least, it's invariant under a bit more than half of the conformal group. Namely, it's invariant under arbitrary transformation involving x minus, because basically this term d plus psi squared, it doesn't affect the transformation where you just do acting on x minus on left mover, but it's invariant only under global part of the conformal transformation acting on x plus, only on the global conformal transformations. And also importantly, so the theory is that it's renormalizable, but actually it's more than that. All UV divergences in this theory can be removed by normal ordering. So let me explain this point. Usually, so if you have diagrams like this, then these infinities appear in this kind of diagrams. They can be removed by just doing normal ordering, and infinities of this type, they cannot be removed by normal ordering. And in 1 plus 1 dimensions, if you have a theory with just potential interaction, then, again, just naive power counting tells you that the only infinities which can appear in this theory, they're of this type and can be removed by normal ordering. But usually when there are derivative interactions in the theory, even with 1 plus 1 dimensions, there are now non-trivial, so there are infinities appearing also in this kind of diagrams, where from lines which do not end in the same vertex, do not begin and end in the same vertex. So usually when you have derivative interactions, theory cannot be renormalized by normal ordering, but so the claim is actually that theory above can be renormalized by normal ordering. And the general statement is the following. So if you have derivative interaction but involving only D pluses, then again, all infinities which appear there of this type. So they can all be removed by normal ordering. And for instance, there is a family of Lorentz invariant models where you have D plus of e to the psi, which generalize the theory on the previous slide. So naively, this would look even non-renormalizable if this potential term is higher order than quadratic. But so the claim is that actually it's not only renormalizable, but renormalizable by normal ordering. And there is some modified power counting argument, a little bit, if you do a little bit non-naive power counting, that it's easy to prove that. But let me just show you how it works at the level of one loop diagrams. So imagine you have somewhat loop diagram, then these factors of D pluses, which appear in the interaction term, they is compared to the same theory without D pluses, just with non-derivative interaction, they lead to extra power of momentum in the numerator coming from the vertices. But now, if you do weak rotation and perform, so if you do your integral by going to polar coordinates, then this Q plus to the n term will give you a phase factor here. And in when you perform in the angular integration, then you will find that in order to cancel this phase factor, you need to bring up high enough power of the phase factor from the denominator. And the moment you do it, you find that, so when you expand, Taylor expand the denominator, you find that to cancel this e to I and phi, the moment you cancel it, you obtain high enough power of Q in the denominator to cancel this divergence appearing here. So if there is only D plus interactions in your theory, then it can be also, so the structure of divergences is the same as the theory without derivative interaction, which is potential interaction, so it can be renormalized by normal ordering. And why is it important? Because for instance, for Liouville, you can do a lot of non-perturbative then when you can renormalize by normal ordering. You just put dots, you can calculate the structure of this algebra, for instance. And so, for instance, in our case, one consequence of this normal ordering renormalization is that actually in this theory, so as I said, at one loop, one finds that G is equal to constant and only beta runs. But in this case, when only D plus psi squared term is present, just like in Liouville theory, from this normal ordering argument, you find that G remains constant at all orders in perturbation theory, and beta multiplicatively normalized at all orders in perturbation theory. But again, because the value of beta doesn't have any meaning and can be shifted by shifting psi, so actually that means that at least scale invariance in this theory is preserved also at the quantum level, not just at the classical level. So I think, actually you can also check this. We checked it by doing what I said, by just explicitly writing down the conformal generators and doing normal ordering. So I'm yet uncertain about, a bit confused about this full conformal, half of the conformal symmetry, whether you can preserve it or not, but scale invariance is preserved at the quantum level and also Lorentz invariance. So I think there is a real hope that one can move further in the analysis of this theory. Now, actually, this theory by itself if you look at the causal structure of this theory, it's not the strange one, it's the conventional one. So if you take one, if you choose plus sign here, then you find that one perturbation moves along the light cone and another propagates inside light cone. And again, now if you choose minus sign here, on the other hand, you will find that there is one propagates, one perturbation propagates along light cone, another propagates in this region, usually which is a space-like separated region. But what it means, in principle, on this theory, you may say, okay, then x is my time and t is my space coordinate, so I just should turn my head by 90 degrees and think about this theory in this way. And again, by doing averaging over different values of psi, you find that in one theory, all perturbations propagate here, in the other theory, with different choice of sign, all perturbations propagate here. But now you can couple the two theories together. So let's introduce two fields now, one with plus here and another with minus, both coupled to this e to the psi factor here, both having d plus kinetic term here. Now you have perturbations propagating both here and here. And again, this theory, as before, it's normalizable by normal ordering, so it shares all the nice features of the previous theory. But now you just don't have any other choice as to say that this theory lives with this instantaneous causal structure. So that illustrates that actually there are theories. There is a hope, really, to find solvable, at least in some sector, models which lives with causal structure, with instantaneous causal structure. So let me come now to this last option, which I mentioned in the beginning of my talk, namely, there is a possibility that coefficients between this d plus psi squared and d minus psi squared, they are actually equal to each other. So this corresponds to a situation when parity is not broken at the level of the action. And that's probably the most confusing case, but that probably also means that it may be the most interesting case. So what you find here, so depending on the value of beta, at the level of just dispersion relations, so in this case, left mover, so if you expand around psi equals 0 vacuum, then dispersion relation is symmetric, so this is light cone, so depending on the value of beta, you find left mover and right mover propagating with different with the same velocities. Now if the absolute value of beta is larger than 1, then the velocity is this velocity squared is negative, so there is just perturbative instability in this model. So let's focus on situation when beta is smaller than 1. Now, when beta is positive, then at the perturbative level, the theory, so it has a mode which is stable and propagates slower than the speed of light. And when it's negative, it propagates faster than the speed of light. Now, if you look at the RG equation in this theory, then it's kind of similar to what was in the case when beta has negative opposite signs, but there is a minus sign here in this square root. And so in UV, beta still flows to zero, so in UV you still find just conventional boson. But on the other hand, when you go to IR, at some point when beta reaches 1, so what happens at this point is that the sound velocity or the propagation velocity for the mode goes to zero. So you reach the point. At that point you have just, for instance, if it were subluminal mode, you have just psi dot squared term in your action, but you don't have gradient term. So this goes to zero. And actually, that's a very familiar situation. That's exactly what happens in Gauss condensate theory. There is also a mode like that there. But here it's different. So the moment such situation happens, actually now you need to include higher order terms in your action. So for instance, there are terms like d d squared psi squared, which usually, if I'm talking about Wilsonian effective action, so there are terms like this, which are suppressed by powers of cutoff, and usually they're subleading, but at this point you need to include them. And in four dimensions, in Gauss condensate series, that's enough to make, to obtain a good effective field theory description it around this point. So in a sense, that strong coupling is fake, so you get around it by just by introducing the next subleading operator. But what happens in two dimensions, that so if you include this term, and now you, so now you, the structure of your propagator is different because there are different powers of t and x derivative here, so it modifies the power counting in your effective theory. And it turns out that in two dimensions with this propagator there is infinite number of relevant operators in this effective theory. So that means that you cannot really just include this term and not to include these higher order terms. So really this point corresponds to physical strong coupling in this theory. It's not clear what's going on.
More than that, I mean, that sounds like it's some kind of extreme UV sensitivity. That, you know, if you started off a very weak coupling in some lattice or whatever, some cutoff formulation, where it was completely well defined, now you could just run your lattice simulation and you get whatever you get. But this would be saying if you change something even slightly in your UV description, the IR physics at this point would be totally different. That's what it suggests, no?
Well, I don't know. It's really so. It just, I think, what you see that perturbation theory does, it just really breaks down here. And it's the usual naive perturbation theory. But yeah, I'm not sure whether it also tells that you have extreme UV sensitivity. I'll tell later what could be one, what sounds for me a plausible scenario, what happens there, but I'm not sure.
You were just saying the fact there are an infinite number of relevant operators, you would just take as a sign that that fixed point has nothing to do with the real IR physics.
Furthermore, so just to back up a little bit, so let me say right away what I think might happen. So to back up a little bit, so this choice actually sounds, it's fine, it doesn't sound too bad. So we have subluminal mode, and again, so you may think that it gets averaged over the whole light cone. So at the end of the day, you will get just some Lorentz invariant theory without, where everything propagates subluminally. But on the other hand, this theory looks really fishy because you get a superluminal mode, but it propagates in both directions, the level of perturbation theory. And parity is not broken at the level of the action here. So what does it mean? And one option, so maybe it just means that this theory doesn't make sense, but on the other hand, it looks, you don't see any obvious pathologies that, when you analyze this theory. There are no instabilities, and it's asymptotically free. So one option which I see, that actually at this point of strong coupling, what happens is that the theory is parity invariant in the level of action, but maybe it breaks parity spontaneously. So maybe the true vacuum of the theory breaks parity, and then again it would be possible to have superluminal propagation. It would be analog, like in four dimensions, you may say you may have superluminal travel if Lorentz invariance is broken spontaneously in your theory. In spite of the fact that Lagrangian is Lorentz invariant, it could be that there is no Lorentz invariant vacuum. Now, in two dimensions, it's not possible to break spontaneously continuous symmetry, but it's enough to break, actually, to have possibility of superluminal travel, it's enough to have to break spontaneously discrete symmetry. And maybe that's what happens in this theory, and that would be the most interesting option. But yeah, I really don't know. But actually, so to strengthen the case for it, so it turns out that as I said, at the perturbative level, these two theories are both subluminal. Superluminal case, these two theories are stable. But actually, if you look at the non-perturbative level, what you find that in subluminal case there is a non-perturbative instability. So, namely, if you look at the Lagrangian, If you look at the Hamiltonian, so these are now just not light cone, but just usual Hamiltonian and momentum to conserve charges in this theory. So what you find that if psi becomes large enough, then for subluminal case, so this gradient term becomes negative. So Hamiltonian is not bounded from below, and actually it's possible to construct, so you can just draw a field configuration, time equals zero. So this is an example of field configuration, t equals zero slice with zero time derivative, such that this field configuration has quantum numbers of the vacuum, so it has zero energy and zero momentum, and it looks like that. So you make a spike of field psi which goes higher than this critical value when this coefficient gets negative, and on the other hand you have another side spike where psi goes in the opposite direction. As a result, the total momentum is zero. And so in superluminal case, this field configuration, they have zero energy, and actually you can construct also by making this spike higher, you may make configuration with negative energy. So it's kind of non-perturbative Ghost instability in this theory in subluminal case. And actually these configurations, they have funny physical interpretations. So if you look, so what I has shown here, the structure of light cone for psi perturbation around this configuration. And so you see that at this point when negative energy starts being negative, it corresponds to a situation when the light cone is bended in one direction. So it's the kind of horizon in this theory for psi perturbation. So from the point of view of causal structure, this spike anti-spike pair is kind of black hole, is a region from which perturbation cannot escape. Anyway, so in subluminal case, there is this instability which may signal that actually the theory at the end of the day is not consistent at the non-perturbative level. However, the story for superluminal case is different. For superluminal case, this coefficient is always positive. This can get negative, but actually the moment this gets negative, it means that the slice t equals zero slice is not space-like slice anymore. So you cannot use it to define your initial value problem. And actually one can prove that if instead you look at the configuration, so defined on the space-like with respect to the metric, so there is some hyperbolic, so there is some metric here corresponding to hyperbolic equation. So to define a Cauchy problem, you should pose your initial conditions on the metric, on the slices which are space-like with respect to this metric. So you will find that it's possible to prove that in superluminal case, the energy defined on the space-like slice is always positive. So there is no analog of this non-perturbative instability for negative when beta is negative. So
is there a unique zero energy classical configuration there, or
there is
situations like this, like the subluminal case, where you can have many different configurations with zero energy?
I think it's a unique model. So the cycle constant has zero energy, and I think that's all possible choices here.
Okay.
So all others would have, where energy is defined in this way,
right.
So you should choose the space-like slice, not t equals zero slice, not necessarily t equals zero slice. So it seems this beta equal to less than zero theory, it looks healthy for all possible tests, apart from that it looks weird, but so maybe it doesn't signal that it's inconsistent, maybe just telling you that it's interesting. And by the way, so I see really two options for superluminal case. So either model doesn't make sense due to some, I don't really know why. So what kind of calculation to make to say that it doesn't make sense? Or, so one option which I see for it to make sense, if parity is broken spontaneously at this point when theory becomes strongly coupled, and then, which is possible for discrete symmetry in two dimensions. And so this theory dynamically realizes instantaneous causal structure by breaking parity. Anyway, it seems interesting to understand what's going on. So let me just, probably one of the last things I want to say. So as I said in the beginning, it's so the series. So it's the next step to study the series, really, to couple them to gravity in two dimensions. And so in principle, one can do that. And then usually one can go to conformal gauge where you have this Liouville mode. And you get some message, so some action which mixes this psi mode and Liouville mode. But I have little to say. So at this stage, what happens in this theory? Just to conclude, so let me discuss what I see the further direction to do with this theory. I think there are two ways to look at this model. One is they were saying in the beginning toys for how non-local physics could look like. For instance, and I think it's rather interesting because of this property that in UV theory flows just to the free massless boson in 1+1 dimensions. So it means that you are observer living in this world and you are doing some short distance measurement. For a while you may think that you live just in a normal world where you have all your correlators are just that of conventional Lorentz invariant theory. But then you find that there are some weird tails, small tails, which you either do precise enough measurement or you wait for long enough time. So you find that there are some tails which go outside light cone, which you first would even interpret as some acausalities, but then you realize that there is just different causal structure. But still it looks like some non-locality, but which develops really at long times. So at short distances, your theory flows to Lorentz invariant theory. So conventional theory. So that sounds interesting. Gravity in two dimensions is not very interesting. For instance, just Einstein gravity in two dimensions has no really, there's no dynamics in it, but there are theories of gravity, like for instance, Dilaton gravity, where you have scalar fields which have black holes. And if these theories can be consistently coupled to these models, that would be really example of very radical resolution of how information gets recovered from the black hole. So again, you may think that there is a in some approximation you think that you have a black hole in your theory, but then you find out that actually information can be just get recovered from the black hole even at the classical level because you have instantaneous modes propagating in the theory. So that would be one direction to proceed. And the second direction to proceed would be, string theories tell us that any theory of two-dimensional theory of quantum gravity can be thought of as a theory of non-critical strings, so the bullshit theory for a non-critical string. So the question, is it possible to now say that, to construct a string theory with this instantaneous causal structure on the bullshit? The very naive intuition, so it would be a theory of extended objects with instantaneous propagation on the surface on this object. So it suggests that there will be also some non-locality from the point of view of the space where this string is, where this object is embedded to. So that would be one way to generalize, to use these theories for something in higher dimensions, to use them as a theory on the surface of a string. And just here, so sample action to start with, that's basically that theory where it was possible to have to do everything by normal ordering, to regularize it by normal ordering. So you take this theory coupled to it to gravity, and you get something like this. And so when you send beta equal to zero, that looks like a theory of just a standard bosonic string. So maybe that would be a way to find theories which deform gravity non-trivially in higher dimensions. Actually, that was one of the original motivation of this project. So I was thinking, what would be the way to UV complete these Higgs phases of gravity? And somehow, practically the only known way to get something which resembles quantum theory of gravity is to have a string theory, to construct a theory of string. Now you want to get a weird quantum theory of gravity. So you want to do something strange on the world sheet. But usually it corresponds just taking different backgrounds on the string theory. But here it seems where if this can be done, that would be really crazy enough modification on the bullshit physics, because we're changing causal structure, so maybe it can lead to something interesting. Both ways, whether you're interested in it in study just non-critical string or as a toy model for non-local gravitational physics, I think both ways, the next question to ask is, so we kind of convinced ourselves that there are quantum field theories with instantaneous causal structure. So are there conformal field theories with instantaneous causal structure? And for instance, formally, this kind of action at the classical level, it looks like a conformal theory, because just it always works that way. When you couple the theory to gravity, then you dress it by Liouville mode, so it gets conformal. So the question whether it can be made consistent, and also are there unitary instantaneous conformal field theories? And if the answer is yes, I think really puzzling question is what happens from the ADS point of view. If you think about ADS dual, now it's three-dimensional theory, which is supposed to be dual to this instantaneous two-dimensional conformal field theory. So what these instantaneous interactions means on the ADS side. But yeah, it's really far over from what I can comment on now. So I think the overall conclusion is that this instantaneous 2D series are quite a bit of fun, and I think being conservative, one can be rather confident that, so even there is some inconsistency about this series is to be found, it won't be something really stupid like some ghost degree of freedom which was overlooked. It will be something more sophisticated than that, and I think we'll learn more both about quantum field theory and gravity. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I have two questions. One may be a little technical and one not.
Yeah.
The technical one, for your the middle theory, the beta minus equals zero theory, where you have half of conformal invariance.
Yeah.
Have you looked at the algebra of the stress energy tensor, what the corresponding half Virasoro algebra?
Yeah, so we checked that the scale invariance, so the global part of it preserved at the quantum level. So Lorentz invariance and global, so the global part of this conformal group in two dimensions is preserved. But I don't know what happens with infinite number of the other Virasoro generators. So I'm not sure yet whether they're preserved or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to know if there's a central charge, for example.
We're doing it different ways, and one way we get it, it's not preserved. So I'm really confused at the moment, so I don't know. But yeah, because here, because of parity breaking, there is no standard argument that scale invariance implies the full conformal symmetry, and we see it already. The classical level, we have just half of the Virasoro, a bit more than half of the Virasoro. Yeah, that's one of the things we're studying. So I don't know if it's answering.
The other non-technical question is, what happens when you couple one of these theories with this instantaneous causal structure to a theory with the standard causal structure? So that's still, I suppose, since the standard causal structure sits inside the instantaneous one, still sort of okay, and it's just a...
Yeah, I think so.
The other model inherits this instantaneous...
Yeah, I think so. So the way to couple it really... So let me follow. That's more or less what I was writing there. To make this coupling consistent, you want to introduce this kind of couplings. And then somehow in the limit when this tends to zero, I think you recover the normal propagator. So it's something that happens in this series, the original theory by itself. And we go at short distances, you have normal physics, and then there are corrections. So roughly, I think the picture is, again, it would be very nice to do really concrete calculation of these correlators. But I think that there will be some
suppressed tail for the for instance you talk about retarded propagators, it will be suppressed tail which goes outside light cone, but there will be zero order propagator which is the same as the usual theory. So that's the answer which I have in mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, when processing, doing some calculation of that kind. And the technical difficulty we're having, it has to do with this common Merriman-Wagner thing, because here it's usually when you have a global group, then you do just some averaging over spin directions. But here it's non-compact symmetry, so it's a bit tricky even to define what are the right observables to look at. It's tricky to do averaging over non-compact group space.
Do you think that any kind of numerical simulations might be helpful here? You probably have to do Hamiltonian, right? Because it's the Euclidean. It all has to do with this weird causal structure. But
yeah, you mean putting the theory on the lattice,
yeah.
And
I mean, at least if you have a positive, the cases where you have a positive definite Hamiltonian,
mm-hmm.
You should be able to just do it in principle.
Yeah, I didn't think about it. Yeah, probably.
And maybe some of the questions you might be able to at least get the answers.
Yeah.
Just to.
Yeah, it could be. But usually it's good to develop some more intuition before going into numerical simulations. And I think there is a hope for this series, especially in the examples when you can do everything by normal ordering. There is a hope to move further by some analytical methods. But yeah, maybe you can also do that. I just don't know. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
In the case when beta is growing, approaching one,
yeah.
Can you say anything about the scaling dimensions?
Scaling dimension of what?
Of the field.
What's happening is this coefficient goes to zero, so it means you change you change the very definition of how you do scaling dimensions. You scale T and X differently now. But you're asking probably whether we calculated some Z factors for some operators here. No. But yeah, but I know that there is infinite number of relevant operators in this area.
So some of the dimension is zero.
It becomes positive for the for so just again with if you start with this kind of action, you don't have grad psi squared term, you have psi dot squared and you nice grad squared psi squared term. If you start with this action for this field, then you find that this field has positive dimension. That's why there are infinite number of relevant operators, because you gain from putting more of these fields in your action. So it sounds really weird. It sounds really the whole derivative expansion just breaks down at that point. That's not the right vacuum to expand.
Any other questions? If you're interested in coming to dinner with us, contact me. Let's thank Sergey for a very interesting talk.